Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I am Rolanda Lister, a maternal fetal medicine physician, the TIPQC Health Equity Officer, and a state project leader for the TIPQC Best for All project. One of the things that I have liked so much about these podcasts are the interesting people we have to get to have conversations with about topics that can help improve care for mothers and babies in Tennessee. Today, we want to highlight National Black Maternal Health Week, which is April 11th through 17th. Black Maternal Health Week was founded and has been led by the Black Mamas Matter Alliance. This week serves as an opportunity for awareness, activism, and community building intended to deepen the national conversation about Black maternal health in the United States. It also amplifies community-driven policy, research, and care solutions. Centering the voices of Black mamas, women, family, and stakeholders can also provide a national platform for Black-led entities and efforts on maternal health, birth, and reproductive justice. Lastly, this week focuses to enhance the community organization on Black maternal health. To help us dive more into this week-long celebration, I have the pleasure of discussing with Kawana Frierson and Tamiko Robinson Steele, who are joining me today for today's podcast.
I am good. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Do you mind telling the audience a little bit about yourself, your family, and how we met, as well as your interest in amplifying the voices of Black mothers?
Definitely. I am a 34-year-old first-time mom to a 7-month-old beautiful baby girl who Dr. Lister helped me deliver. And so she was my OB through, I would say, a pretty tough pregnancy. And so she definitely helped us get on the other side of that and keep me and my baby girl safe during the process. And I would say that right now my focus on amplifying the Black voices for Black mamas, is going to be just letting women know that advocating for yourself is probably going to be the best thing you can do. Finding you someone that you trust and advocating for yourself is literally top tier.
Mm-hmm. And who were those people for you?
Honestly, you were definitely one of them, Dr. Lister. I think there's kind of a stereotype on, you know, your doctors, but I say make your doctors your best friend. Be honest with them, be open with them, get comfortable with them. Mm-hmm. But definitely my family as well, just kind of being there during that support system, but definitely your providers, be open with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Such a pleasure to have met you. Really, your birth, it really helped us to realize how important it was to have a collaborative team and really focusing on the mother being like you being the center of the birth experience. Yeah. And doing what we needed to support you. So thanks so much for sharing. Tamiko, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your birth experiences and why you're interested in amplifying the voice of Black mothers.
Hello, and thank you as well for having me on here today. I am Tamiko Robinson Steele. I am a mother of two. My son is 22 and my daughter just turned one.
What? What a split. Oh, man. I'm going to have to delve deeper into that, how life was different for your 22, how birthing was different from your 22-year-old versus your one-year-old. But yes. Yes,
we can definitely get into that. But yes, mother of two, my birthing experiences were so different because I was 19 when I birthed my son and 40 when I birthed my daughter. Mm. And so it leaps and bounds. Like I essentially was a child. I didn't know anything. And this time I had amassed so much information and just echoing, advocated for myself in ways that I didn't know was possible the 20 years prior. So because of that, I would say it's important to amplify the Black voices in this regard by just amassing as much information as you can, collecting people like the Pokemon cards to have in your corner who will speak up when even you won't or can't. I think this go around, that was that much more important and more in the forefront for me.
When you were 19, did you feel like you could speak up for yourself? Or
no, I didn't. I didn't. And it wasn't because I wasn't vocal, because I've always kind of been a vocal person, at least into late teen adulthood. I had kind of rallied myself and given myself a voice. It was out of ignorance. I just didn't know anything. And that was kind of my mother's and aunt's generation and my grandmother's. Those were the generations, at least in my family and community, where it was taboo to talk about certain things. No one really shared their birthing experiences, or no one talked about breastfeeding in those ways. That was something I didn't even know was a possibility, or I never considered it for myself. Let me say that. I remember when the nurse walked in and I was like, I don't need you, ma'am. I don't know what. It was just because it had never dawned on me that that was something that I would, should, or could do. So, yeah, I don't know if I
answered. Do you think that was more related to your family not talking about it? Or did you, when you saw the imagery of birth, like in the community, in the media, on TV, what did you receive from that imagery then versus now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in part, it was because my family didn't talk about it in the way that they would now. It was the imagery that was on TV, the access that we had. You know, there wasn't social media like there is today. I think there was like, yeah, nothing that I could plug into a community virtually. And just communal, like there was nothing in my community, at least nothing that I was tapped into would have shined the light on that area. But fast forwarding to today, I am so open with my family and even my mom. I found out stuff that I didn't even know. Like I would just say things and invite my family and friends into myself in a way that I didn't 20 years prior, right? So I would talk about wanting to breastfeed, figuring all of this stuff out.
How'd you decide you wanted to breastfeed this time around?
Just the knowledge that you have and the good that it does for you and your baby, the connection that you all have. I birthed with the midwives this time. Because that was also something that I'd never known about in my community or my family. And I found out by way of doing that, that my mother had, even though she birthed at the hospital, she had 3 unmedicated births. She birthed us all naturally. And I was like, girl, why did you do that? And I was like, didn't they offer you medication? And she was like, yes, I didn't want it. But that was something that I, in my 40 years, I'd never known, that she had never talked about. And maybe it was, again, one of those things that that generation just weren't open to. But because I broached the conversation, like she was very open to sharing that with me.
So Kawana, I think your experience is probably a little bit different from, maybe different from Tamiko's. How would you say like the messages that you had gotten around your birth when you were pregnant
Yeah, I would definitely say I had a bit of a different experience. One thing I will say, I can definitely appreciate the openness to be able to talk about the breastfeeding process and letting people know that it's okay. And I think that there's a lot of moms on both sides who just don't know. For myself, because of all of the trials that we had during both birth, I wasn't able to successfully breastfeed, but that was definitely something that I wanted to do. And so I did have the knowledge, but I didn't, unfortunately, my body wasn't set up for it. And so knowing that you have those options and what those options look like, and what's good for you and what's good for your body and things like that, I think are extremely important in opening up that conversation. So I definitely commend you for that, for broaching that conversation with your family, because it's bigger than we know. My experience, I think, was a little bit tougher. My family, we kind of, I would say, prepared for the worst, right? Expecting for the best. And so I had to have those conversations up front with my family and saying, hey, this is going to be a tough and difficult time for us. I need my support system. I need you guys to rally around me. I need you guys to understand that when I can't speak for myself, I need the next best person to be able to speak for me. My family, my mom has had 3 kids, and her birth experiences were, I wouldn't say great, but they were normal, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Whereas no one in my family had ever been through the birthing experience. I don't know that anyone has, but I think that bringing your family in and having someone there to advocate for you is so, so important. So, so important.
I think what both of you guys have said in terms of, like, in your case, Tomiko, it seems like there was a lot of hush. There was a lot of secrecy around the birth experience and the breastfeeding experience, at least initially, before you were able to kind of advocate for yourself. And it seemed like you had no problem talking about, Kawana, you know, like, this is what I need from you, and this is how you can be there for me. And I know for myself, I've had 3 babies, and my medical knowledge definitely filled in the gaps in terms of the benefits of breastfeeding and to both mom and baby. But that pragmatic knowledge of, like, what's going to get you through the initial few weeks, when especially that very first baby, when it hurts to breastfeed, or at least it feels like it's uncomfortable, and that discomfort can really be emotionally taxing on some way. And thankfully, I had 2 people that made a huge difference for me is my mother-in-law. She had said, if you can just get through the first 3 weeks, if you can just push through, then it'll be dramatically easier. And just having her there, just kind of cheering me on and setting that realistic expectation. Because a lot of times, from a provider point of view, you just, like, go down the list, what's beneficial for the baby, what's beneficial for the mom. But when it really comes down to it, if your nipples are cracked and sore and emotionally you're up every hour and a half, and the baby is doing the cluster feeding, mentally, there's a lot of mentals that you got to be prepared for as well. And I think that support group, that I could certainly attest to how important that is. So, you know, we hear about Black Mamas, the Black Mamas Matter Alliance, really kind of instituting this Black Maternal Health Week for the reasons that we had discussed in the intro. When you look back to Tomiko back then, 20 years ago, and look today, do you feel that your providers, your community, and that's the sentiment that Black mamas do matter? And absolutely. You as well, Kawana. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, 20 years ago, I was a baby, or when I first had my son, I was a baby. I didn't know much in the way of birthing and all the things mama. I remember I was in college, so I was at school the day before, just walking around. I remember calling home on the little phone. That's before cell phones. We had beepers and stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember calling home, and one of my aunts answered, and I was just, you know, yapping away. And I was like, oh, I think I felt, no, I said I was cramped or something like that. No idea what that meant. Mm-hmm. And so like my happy tail hung up the phone. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't know is back at home, they were like, Mimi, that's my family nickname. Mimi's in labor. Mimi's in labor. And you know, I get home, they were like, so where have you been? And I'm like, I've been in school. And they were explaining to me, baby, you're probably in labor. And so sure enough, mm-hmm. 3 o'clock in the morning.
You didn't know what it felt like.
Girl, not a clue, not a clue. So 3 o'clock in the morning, like I wake up because for some reason, for some familiar reason, I needed to sleep in the bed with my aunt. I feel like it was probably for mental safety. Like I needed to be attached to somebody in the closeness of the bodies. And so I woke her up tossing and turning. She was like, baby, you hurting? I said, uh-huh. She was like, well, go on in there and wash up. And that's not what she said, but she was like, go on in there and wash Miss Thing, and then we'll take you on to the hospital. Like, that's a going thing in my family. You go, you wash up, and then you get transported to the And so, like, that was the beginning of that birth story, right? But so I actually was pregnant another time. So in between these two births, mm-hmm. I was pregnant with twins. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that I was pregnant with twins. I remember people always, because I'm naturally a slender person. And so I remember people remarking on like how big and how fast I was getting, I don't know what I'm saying.
You have how fast you were getting big.
Yes.
Yes.
But I remember, yeah, and that was before, and it may have just been the insurance I had, but I was due for an ultrasound at 6 months, but I hadn't had an ultrasound before then. And again, I don't know if it was the insurance or just the way the system worked at that point. Mm-hmm. But I remember I was due for an ultrasound like the next week. And I felt something, and I still remember it felt like a heart. It was a pulsing, and it turned out the sac was dropping and burst. And I remember the ambulance coming as they were putting me on the stretcher. That's when it burst. And so I remember being in the ambulance. This like still haunts me: the ambulance ride and the being in the emergency room. Which is why it's so important to have someone around you who can be vocal, who can speak, and all these things. So in the ambulance, I remember the medic asking me how far along I was. And I said 6 months. And the look of disgust and disbelief on his face, he didn't believe me. And I mean, and I get that because like I was so much bigger than what he thought I would. But instead of just asking more questions, like mm-hmm. the way I was treated, and I don't remember much. A lot of that time is hazy, but that I remember. And then I remember being in the emergency room after I was transported, and them telling me that I was losing. That they came in and said that it's twins, mm-hmm. and you won't be taking them home. And one of the nurses was so, I don't know what kind of verbal response I had, but I remember her like kind of like, be quiet or something she said. And I'm just like, in my mind, like none of that is registering. I remember all of this after the fact, but there was no one in there in both of those places who could advocate for me. And that's, I most regret that because like who I am today, I feel like I would have had the presence of mind to at least clock who they were, names, and like all this stuff like that, because those types of things need to be reported. Right. Those people need to understand that that is not how you treat people, mm-hmm. no matter where they're from. I don't know if it was the neighborhood that I came from is why the ambulance person did that. Like, I have no idea, but like they need to be aware of the impact. Like, this is almost 15 years later. And it still,
you still remember it vividly.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So from that till now, mm-hmm. and me just collecting people like Thanos ring, like the Thanos ring, collecting them, honey. I had a doula. I had one of my best friends in the room as emotional support. My husband obviously was in there. Another friend was there. He was capturing it on video. Like, I had people in there who I had a postpartum doula. Like, I was on it.
You had your A-team.
Yes, and I had all of the information so that mm-hmm. I also vocalize what I wanted and what I didn't want. I was prepared. So mm-hmm. like leaps and bounds, like all three of those journeys were so different, but like I hold them dear. I treasure them for the gems that I'm now able to give to other mothers.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So did you feel like having all of the family support and that your doulas, your postpartum doulas, all of the people that you mentioned, do you feel like that helped you matter more to the providers, like the hospital side, or do you? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I do. Because in the midwives, where I had a midwife and a nurse, they were exceptional. They were exceptional. But because I just, yes, because you have another person in the room who is knowledgeable, who is knows the language and how to speak to those professions, I think all of that matters. Like, I may know something, but not know the way to deliver it to those professions, right? In a way where they receive it. And so I think when you have people in positions like that who can speak to someone in a way where they're receptive is very important.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Kawana? Do you feel like Black mamas matter? Do you feel like you mattered in your birth experience?
So when I first found out I was pregnant, I'm a cardiac patient. I suffer from heart failure. And so I remember my very first doctor's appointment with a cardiologist and walking in and saying, so, hey, I recently found out I'm pregnant. I know that, you know, some things have to change, some things, the medications that I'm on, some of them may not be safe. How do we go forward? And the response that I got was, this isn't something that we want to hear. Mm-hmm. This isn't something that makes us happy. This baby is going to kill you. Mm-hmm. We can't see you. And I remember thinking, this is my life. This is my choice. I'm not asking you for your opinion. What are our options? How do we move forward? Mm-hmm. Again, we can't, if you decide to have this baby, we won't see you. Mm. So I was actually referred out of my clinic. My first clinic that I saw, not understanding then that pregnancy for me and pregnancy for my other counterparts may not look the same. I had been pregnant before when I was younger, and it wasn't a successful pregnancy, so I didn't go through the whole birthing experience. So I didn't really know what that looked like. But the way I was treated, like you said, I vividly remember it to this day. And so when I got to Vanderbilt, it was a completely different experience. And we matter when we say we matter. Mm. We matter when we speak up. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to when you asked her, you know, do you feel like having someone by your side made a difference in there? It definitely makes a difference. When I feel like when they see people surround you with love and support, they look at it like, whoa, okay.
That's the one I need to.
Yeah. We need to take care of her because she's loved, she's supported. Whereas a person who comes in off the street or that doesn't have the same amount of support, I don't feel like they get the same benefit or the same care as someone with much more support and a sterilized plan. Mm-hmm. Because that first appointment I went in there by myself. There was no one with me. You know, I knew I was pregnant, but that was it. I didn't know anything else. I didn't know really how to have the conversation about what I was dealing with or what I was going through. I went in expecting, hey, you're my doctor. Let's figure this out together. Mm-hmm. And what I was met with was not what I expected. And so fast forward to Vanderbilt, when I got with my new cardiologist, I remember her telling me we had to sit down and she said, I'm going to be honest with you and I'm going to give you the facts. Here's the facts. You may not make it and baby may not make it. But if you choose to continue with this pregnancy, we're going to do everything we can to support you. That has stuck with me. It changed my outlook on the healthcare system. Because honestly, after that first experience, I was like, there's no way. There's no way. Like, you know, I'd rather just do a home birth and not even have to deal. But because of the extenuating circumstances, that wasn't an option for me. But it was just a completely different system. And I feel like advocating. I know I keep saying it, but if you don't advocate for yourself and you don't have that support system, it's a different world out there. It is a completely different world. even getting to the way I was even referred to Vanderbilt before I got to my first cardiologist, I went and seen this other guy and he said, hey, I can't help you, but if you're sure that this is what you want to do, and I kept saying, I'm sure, listen, I don't know what next month or the end of this pregnancy looks like, but I know that I don't believe in terminating pregnancies. I know that I want to carry this through. How do we move forward? Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying, let me get you in the right hands. But imagine had I just went in there and they said, oh, well, this baby may kill you. And it freaked me out. It scared me, right? So I was like, no, just terminate my pregnancy. I don't want to do this. And I would have never been here. You know, I would have never been here to tell this story. My baby girl would have never been. And, you know, of course, we still have some roads to go, but we're healthy. We're thriving for the most part. You know, we're good. But had I not advocated and had my support system, I think things would have went so much differently.
That's so beautiful to hear. And both of you guys have both said how important advocacy and support is. For those who may not have the strong family ties, I mean, Tamika, you mentioned you were in the bed with your auntie, you know, and just the experience of having family close enough where you could reach out to them and get that support. What kind of advocacy do you feel like needs to happen on a citywide level, a statewide level, for those who may not have the words or the voices to speak for themselves?
I think it's so important to connect communities, right? So I have 3 or 4 friends who we all birthed within 5 months of one another. I was able to connect in with a different community, mommy groups, all of these things that are so important. And so I think for our healthcare providers and just our system as a whole, not only providing the things that we need medically, but also the things that we need community, mentally, all of the ways that we can build one another up and just ask questions. Because of that core group of girls that I just spoke about, we are able to bounce things off of one another. My daughter, Juniper, is, I think, the youngest out of the 4. And so their babies tend to hit the milestones faster or first. And so I'm like, okay, so what did y'all do when X, Y, and Z happened? All right, you've stopped. The year mark has happened. Did you stop breastfeeding? Did you transition straight to X, Y, and Z? Like, what are these things? And so because I'm plugged into a community that's not even my own community that, you know, for nurture and nature, but as a community that I built through friendship and shared experiences. So I think if there is some way to get people tapped in and connected like that, mothers will have so much more emotional support and other people to help them carry the weight of what motherhood is.
Beautiful, beautiful. What about you, Kawana? What do you think? What do stakeholders, policymakers need to have in mind, you know, for those who are not able to speak for themselves?
I think that one of the biggest pieces is education. And that doesn't just come from, of course, educate yourself so you know what questions to ask. But put pressure on your providers to, hey, just take a second look into this. But as kind of like she said, as a community, you know, get involved with different communities, get involved with, I know that I'm going to take part in the March of Dimes. Just getting involved with different things to see how can you make a difference. There's so many different, I had no idea how big this mommy world was before I entered it. And so there's so many different things and so many ways to connect with other people. And social media is a big one, getting involved in the talks that are happening on social media. There's a lot of, I know I'm in this, my daughter was a micro preemie. So I'm in a micro preemie group and a lot of questions are like, hey, my 27-weeker is doing this now. Did yours experience this? And so just like she said, getting involved with those groups, being open, being honest, and doing your own research is mm-hmm. definitely, I know for me, my situation was so complex. And so a lot of providers didn't really understand or know. And so I had to go do my own research to know, hey, well, I'm dealing with this. Have you ever dealt with this before? Well, can you do the research on the medical end so we can come together and figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful words of wisdom from two awesome women. I love the idea of building that community and supporting one another. In the mommy community, all of us either are a mother or have a mother. So there's a wide network of mothers wanting to support one another. So I love that you both mentioned building that community around you. Well, we could talk all day, but we are going to wrap this session up. Are there any final pieces of advice that you would give to expectant mothers, you know, who find themselves pregnant and want to know, like, what maybe you would have told your pre-pregnancy self if you had another opportunity to get pregnant again? Any final pieces of advice?
Yeah. Take it easy on yourself. I stressed myself out by all of the, I felt like I had to have every single thing in place. I'm a type A personality, so I am an organizer, like all of these things. So I felt like if I can get all of this done in this amount of time before a baby gets here, like I'm going to have bubbles and rainbows. Like that's, it's not real. So I would say take it easy on yourself and give yourself some grace.
I love it. Love it. What about you, Kiwana?
Definitely get you a pregnancy partner. And that doesn't necessarily mean someone that has to be pregnant with you, but just someone when you're get those feelings and emotions. I know I would call my best friend and I would say, hey, I'm feeling crazy today. Like, is this normal for pregnancy? Like, you know, did you experience this? Getting someone who's maybe been through it, almost like a pregnancy mentor, I guess you would say, but definitely being okay with relying or leaning on them for a little bit of support.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Give yourself grace and find a partner. I love that. Well, we are going to wrap up today's episode. Thank you so much for sharing your birth stories and your wonderful advice to our moms and stakeholders. We look forward to celebrating. We're looking forward to as much participation as possible. Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org. That's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.